These are spectacularly interesting times at the Metropolitan Opera, and America's greatest opera company is revitalized in all kinds of powerful ways under the leadership of its new general manager, Peter Gelb, who has helped initiate a number of different moves to make the Metropolitan Opera more present in our cultural landscape, more vividly present. And chief among those ways is a means by which the Met is sharing itself and its music making with the general public in a series of digital simulcasts in movie theaters across the country. And joining me for the next few minutes to talk about this very exciting reality, Peter Gelb, the new general manager of the Metropolitan Opera. Mr. Gelb, a welcome to our program.
Thank you very much.
You have not been on the job very long at all, and yet here we are with all kinds of things already taking place. Tell us at what point in time you actually were able to begin the wheels turning to bring about some of these exciting innovations for the Met.
Well, I guess these initiatives are really representative of kind of a lifetime of work in the world of music. I was appointed to this position at the Metropolitan Opera in the fall of 2004. I only became the general manager officially on August 1st, I've had a variety of different jobs during my career, including running a record label, and I've been a producer of television programs and films about music, including at one point on a freelance basis running the Metropolitan Opera's media department in the 80s, where I produced The Ring Cycle for PBS, amongst other projects. So, I guess in a way that was why the Metropolitan Opera board sought me out for this position, because they didn't want to hire a conventional opera director. They wanted somebody who would function more as a producer and who would be able to think of new ways to stimulate the public and the art form, because, you know, opera is not a young art form. It's an older one, and we have to sort of be extra vigilant to combat its aging.
Absolutely. So so obviously, you didn't just walk into the door on the 1st of August and begin work. I mean, you have already, in a sense, been working as general manager-elect, I guess,
right,
of the Met. I mean, in order to make all this possible.
Right. There was a period of approximately 18 months of build-up to my becoming the general manager. There was a six-month period where I was a consultant, then a year for which I was general-elect. During that year, I worked on the renegotiation of various labor agreements with our unions to permit the high-definition transmissions that we are talking about today, and amongst other electronic innovations that the Met's going to be partaking in this season and in future years.
It's fascinating what a different sort of public stance this is for the Met, in that the tradition long has been that the Met has been tremendously protective of itself and of its legacy, to the point of almost completely excluding cameras from inside the opera house. I mean, I can think of several different examples in which documentarians really had a door sort of summarily slammed in their faces because, no, we can't take a camera in here, and this can't be recorded, and this can't be broadcast. And you, in a sense, to a large extent, are throwing open the doors of the Metropolitan Opera. What do you think, most importantly, is accomplished by this new attitude of openness?
Well, first of all, I think, you know, the Met, it's not that the Met didn't want to be open. I just think it was probably too troublesome to be open to documentarians, as you put it. You're absolutely right. There were so many union rules and regulations that the Met was hamstrung by them. And quite frankly, for decades, publicity, marketing, advertising were things that the Met weren't required, because everything sold out. So the reason why I'm undertaking all these initiatives of, you know, lifting this barrier between the Met and the broader public is because it's absolutely essential that a new public learn about opera and become interested in opera. But it all begins, really, with what we do on the stage itself. One of my the most important initiatives I'm undertaking is to double the number of new productions at the Met, to invite the world's greatest theater directors to come and work at the Met, thereby creating productions here that actually demonstrate what opera is meant to be, which is this, when it works at its best, which is a sublimely satisfying art form that marries music and theater, because after all, it's opera that preceded musicals, and it was originally intended by the great composers, whether Puccini, Verdi, Mozart, Wagner, whoever, to be a theatrical art form. And so that's, you know, that's the main thrust of what I'm doing is on the one hand, you know, respecting the musical values of the Met, the great traditions of the great orchestra, the Metropolitan Opera, the great casting that the Met has achieved over the years, but to up the ante, so to speak, artistically at the same time, so that it can appeal not only to the diehard aging audience, but also to a new audience.
So opera doesn't go the way of the butter churn.
Well, hopefully not. The wonderful thing about opera is that the geniuses who composed the operas that have lasted the, you know, throughout time, at least the last few hundred years, their work is timeless. But it requires, you know, modern stage productions to excite the public, and that's why, you know, this season, for example, even though it was a season that was planned before I got here, I managed to make some changes and introduce a few new productions that hadn't been planned, like Anthony Minghella's, the filmmaker Anthony Minghella's wonderful new Madame Butterfly that seemed to captivate audiences here. At the same time, we had, on our opening night, we transmitted the opening night performance onto giant screens at Times Square, which the mayor of New York graciously agreed to close the traffic so that the real inner public of New York could enjoy this experience.
And I have to say, I greeted with great joy the news, although I don't know if this ultimately came to fruition or not, but that the Late Night with David Letterman show was going to show an excerpt from The Barber of Seville.
Yes, it was a live performance. The first time in the history of the Letterman show that a complete opera, not a whole opera, but a complete sequence of an aria, it wasn't an aria, it was actually the finale of Act One, in a slightly cut-down version, but we had crammed into that studio 22 orchestra members, a chorus of, I think, 16 in soldiers' uniforms, and our principal six cast members all lined up in front of standing microphones, but in full period costume.
And one has to hope that there will be many more such opportunities for regular folks to turn on the television and see something of the Met in those kind of accessible venues.
Well, we're hoping for that. But what's particularly exciting right now is these high-definition transmissions, because this is a way, I think, to really both stimulate the huge public that we already have listening to the Met on Saturday afternoons on the radio, as well as invite a new public into local movie theaters where they can experience this live spectacle of opera on giant screens with surround sound, and really provide a kind of sense of artistic community locally that would not have been possible. It's only possible now thanks to high-definition technology.
It occurs to me that this is in some ways sort of reminiscent of the good old days when the Met toured the country, and it was possible to experience the Met in a place like the Twin Cities, for instance, or Atlanta, Georgia. In a sense, this isn't exactly that, but it reminds us of that.
Well, certainly, I think, you know, one of the great advantages of the old Met days of the Met touring is that it further established a loyal national audience and constituents for the Met, and it's that loyal guard, you know, that remains partly from the old touring days that we think is going to flock to the movie theaters along with new audiences as well.
Was this a difficult thing to sell to the movie theater firms that are cooperating with you? I mean, did they fairly quickly embrace this idea, or even understand this idea, this proposal?
The idea was embraced quite enthusiastically and quickly by the movie theater companies that are in this business, because they're very interested themselves in establishing alternative entertainment forms to movies. Now that they have high-definition technology exists, and and video images in high definition that are equal in picture quality to movies can be projected in movie theaters. It provides the possibility for movie theaters of offering not only the Metropolitan Opera, but other forms of entertainment live. In Canada, for example, our partner there, Cineplex, has been offering live wrestling in movie theaters. So it's now opera and wrestling in Canada. Have your pick. So the movie theaters actually are very excited about this because they want to devise other means to entice audiences into their houses.
I can't let you go without asking two very quick questions, which I've heard from more than one person, different people excited about this first simulcast of The Magic Flute on December 30th. One person asked me, so do we get to eat popcorn? I mean, is it going to feel like we're at a film in that kind of respect? And the other thing is, at the end of this, are we supposed to applaud?
Well, I hope the answer to both of those is yes. I mean, I've never been inhibited from applauding in a movie theater when I like the movie. It doesn't happen often, but it's happened sometimes. And certainly, if there's a great performance, which hopefully we'll be delivering, I would certainly encourage the audience to applaud, and I hope they will.
As far
as popcorn is concerned, I think that's part of the movie theater experience. Certainly, the concessions in the movie theaters have not been told not to sell popcorn. It should be an interesting cultural merger of grand opera and popcorn.
And of course, Magic Flute is a superb choice, not only because of the opera itself, but because of this splendid production from the Met, which people, of course, will find very exciting.
Well, it's not only as you may know, it's an adaptation of the original production that Julie Taymor, the director of The Lion King, produced on the Met stage a couple of years ago. But one of my initiatives is to have an annual family entertainment offering from the Met. In this case, it's the Julie Taymor production, which he has redirected, but in a scaled-down version, not in terms of the scenery, which is as dazzling as ever, or in the cast, which is spectacular and is conducted by James Levine, and our wonderful music director, and with all the top stars like Nathan Gunn as Papageno, and the great bass baritone Rene Papa as Sarastro. But it's sung in English. So it should be a very accessible and interesting experience on the highest artistic level, and it's the Met's answer to the Nutcracker in terms of holiday programming.
Peter Gelb, General Manager of the Metropolitan Opera, my warmest applause to you for all these exciting initiatives, and best wishes to you and everyone at the Met.
Thank you so much.